This episode may contain content of a graphic nature, including descriptions of physical and sexual violence against adults, children, and animals. Listener discretion is advised.
Hi, everyone. I'm Tanya.
And I'm Talia.
And we are Crimes and Consequences, a true crime podcast. Hi, Talia.
Hi, Tanya.
How are you today?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm a little under the weather. And we love you guys so much that we had to record.
You're definitely taking one for the team today.
Yeah, that's all right. It had to be done.
Had to be done.
I can't disappoint people.
They need the true crime.
Exactly. It's important.
That's what we tell ourselves.
It's an important part of your day. I know it. The most important, probably.
It is mine. Besides lunch.
Oh, yeah. Lunch is a close second.
Anyway, what do you got for me?
I have a great story for you this week. Before I start, I'm just going to remind everyone to please subscribe or follow on whatever app you're listening to, and I am just going to do it.
Do it.
On October 1st, 1985, Michelle Avila, and her family and friends called her Missy, walked out of Mission High School in the San Fernando Valley and looked for her boyfriend Bobby's car. He was picking her up to drive her home, and when his old Mustang turned the corner into view, Missy smiled. 17-year-old Missy had been dating Bobby for the last 3 months, and she often wondered if they would get married someday. You know, how you fantasized when you were a kid.
Yes.
He pulled up to the curb where she was standing and hopped out of the car to open her door before she was able to grab the handle herself. She got into the car, and Bobby ran back to the driver's side and got in. He asked her if she would spend the rest of the day with him, but she told him she couldn't because she had made plans that afternoon with one of her best friends, Laura Doyle. Bobby tried to get her to change her mind, but he wasn't successful.
She at least picked her friend over...
A guy?
A guy.
Yeah, absolutely. She decided against spending the afternoon with Bobby because Laura had recently broken up with her boyfriend, Vic, and Missy thought she needed some girl time. She told Bobby that Laura was really counting on her, and Bobby thought that one of the things he really loved about Missy was her loyalty. As he dropped her off, she got out and yelled to him that she'd call him later, and he drove away. She got home about 1 p.m., and her mother, Irene, was in the kitchen working on a flower arrangement, which she did to earn some extra money, and it allowed her to work from home. In addition to Missy, who was the only daughter of the family, she had two older brothers, Ernie Jr. and Mark, and one younger brother, Chris. Their parents had gotten divorced a few years ago, and Missy had just recently gotten out of the depression she had over it. Missy told her mom that Laura was going to be by soon to pick her up, and they were going to hang out. Irene thought that Laura was mad at Missy, but Missy assured her that they had made up. Laura had mistakenly blamed Missy for her breakup with Vic. Vic and Missy had dated a few times before he and Laura got together.
So the friends are swapping boyfriends.
Yeah. And Missy and Vic remained really close friends. Thankfully, the tiff that Laura had with Missy was apparently gone, and the girls were going to enjoy some time drinking, smoking pot, and maybe doing a little coke.
Oh, shit.
Yeah. They were experimenting at nearby Stonehurst Park, where a lot of teens hung out.
What year is this?
85.
Oh, yeah, that's the
height of the coke era.
Yeah, there you go.
Missy was very popular. The boys at school all seemed like they wanted to date her, and the girls wanted to be friends with her. She was petite, only standing at 4'11".
I hated girls like that at school. So jealous of them.
So jealous, exactly. Missy had green eyes and very long, dark hair that came to her waist. Her hair was one of her favorite attributes, and she loved styling it and brushing it.
Oh, hell yeah, in the 80s, man.
She had some great hair, too.
Get that hair as high as possible.
Mm-hmm. Missy was very easy to like and had a happy and outgoing personality that just attracted people, so no wonder Laura didn't want to stay upset with her. Before going out with Laura, Missy called another one of her close friends, Christy Crawford, and told her about her afternoon plans. The girls had gotten their hands on some coke and definitely were going to the park to party. Christy had moved away from the neighborhood with her parents to Long Beach, California, but she and Missy continued to be the best of friends. Christy's grandmother still lived in the neighborhood, and when she visited her grandma, she always spent time with Missy. So I'm going to tell you a little bit about Laura Doyle. She was a skinny girl with pale skin and long red hair when she had some hair, let me tell you. I mean, I saw a picture and oh my gosh, I'm sure it was thick as hell and it was a lot of hair. Her parents were alcoholics, so she spent a lot of time in Missy's home, so much so that she had started calling Irene Mom while she was there. She wasn't as pretty as Missy. She was described as looking angular and her mouth was unattractive.
Angular?
In the book I read, which I'll tell you about later. I know angular, so I'm thinking, is it just like sharp instead of a softer sort of look? I don't know. You'll know when you see the picture what I mean, though.
Okay, I've never heard of someone angular. Like an angular butt.
When Laura showed up at Missy's house to pick her up in the early afternoon of October 1st, Missy told her mom she'd be home by 6, and if she was running late, she'd definitely call her. At 6 p.m., the Avila's phone rang. Irene thought for sure it was Missy asking if she could spend the night at Laura's, but it wasn't Missy on the other end of the phone. It was Laura. She asked to talk to Missy. "Wasn't Missy with you?" Irene asked her. Laura said, "No." When we had gotten to the park, Missy had ran into three guys she knew that were driving a blue Camaro. Missy wanted to go talk to them, so Laura had dropped her off, and she told Missy she was going to get some gas and that she'd be right back.
Did Laura not know the men?
No. By the time Laura returned, Missy was gone, and so were the boys in the Camaro. Laura had thought Missy would have been home by now. Irene's stomach dropped. Did Laura know the boys? No, as I just told you. They must have been friends of Missy's.
What about Christy? Is she there?
No. At this point in the story, it was just Laura and Missy who had gone to the park, apparently. And so when they showed up, there was nobody else there but these boys.
They must have been ugly or Laura would have wanted to stay. I mean, three boys in a Camaro.
I know. Hot stuff in 1985. Before hanging up, Laura asked Irene to pass along the message to Missy to call her when she got home. Irene was uneasy after that phone call with Laura. Missy had told her that she would call if she was going to be late. There had to be a good reason she didn't call yet. So Irene waited. By 10 p.m. and no sign of Missy, Irene tried not to panic. She laid down on the sofa and eventually dozed off. Ernie and Mark got home at midnight and didn't want to wake their mom asleep on the couch, so they just went to bed. Irene woke up at 3 a.m. and checked on her kids. Mark and Ernie were asleep in their bedrooms, but Missy's room was empty.
Oh, fuck.
I know. And Irene's first thought was she got kind of pissed because she's like, where is Missy? Why didn't she call? Did she just think she could just go somewhere and not tell me? That was her initial thought. She couldn't go back to sleep because now she's just mad and probably anxious. So when Mark woke up at 7 a.m., and Mark, I believe, had just graduated high school that school year before, so he's about 18, he encountered his mom in the kitchen and just knew something was wrong. Missy wasn't home yet, and Irene didn't know what to do. Mark assured her that Missy must have slept over a friend's house and just didn't want to wake her. For the next few hours, Irene again tried not to panic and attempted to do things to take her mind off thinking something bad had happened to Missy. She and Mark decided to visit Christy, who was staying at her grandmother's house, to see if she knew anything, and she's just really right down the street. They went to Christy's, and after determining that Missy wasn't there, Christy helped them by calling around to other friends, but no one knew where Missy was, and also no one knew who the three boys in the Camaro were. Finally, around 3 p.m., Irene asked Christy to take her to the Foothills police station. At first, the police officer taking the report scoffed at Irene, believing that Missy was probably with friends or had run away, but Irene was not leaving.
I like how he scoffs at her, thinking, oh, your daughter's probably just ran away.
I know.
Like, that's not a big deal.
I know.
Oh,
I know,
hello, my 17-year-old daughter ran away. That's a big deal.
That's a big deal. Like, we're not going to spend our time on it. Whatever. The officer finally took the report, and Irene went home to wait. So while this is happening, Irene's waiting. A couple days go by.
Days.
And a couple guys named Robert Saunders and Jim Rutledge were hiking buddies. since 1959. In October 4th, 1985, so this is 3 days later, the friends were preparing for a hiking and camping trip in the Angeles National Forest, and by noon, they were near Tujunga Canyon and Camp Colby, which the kids in the area referred to as Wikiup, and they often partied at this canyon.
Wikiup.
Robert and Jim frowned going through the area, noticing the graffiti that had shown up in recent years, marring the natural beauty around them, and just complaining like the kids are ruining everything.
Those damn kids.
They began their hike and they hiked upstream near a creek in the canyon. As they moved along, Robert and then Jim noticed that the large log that laid across the rocks near the shore of the stream wasn't where it usually was. So it's something that they always saw when they hiked in this area. It had been moved about 5 feet from where the rocks were and now is covering something in the water.
That's no good.
No. Jim squinted and looked closer, grabbing Robert's arm when he saw it. It's a body. Do you see it?
Oh, fuck.
I know. Robert took a few steps closer and saw blue jeans and a tan-colored shirt. He goes, no, those are just some clothes caught up in the log.
Really, Robert?
Yeah, he's like, some kids probably got drunk and leave some clothes behind.
He obviously doesn't listen to true crime.
I know, right?
No, that's not clothes. Those are not clothes.
But Robert looked again when he saw Jim just shaking his head no, like, no, it's a body. He finally then noticed what Jim saw. There was long, dark hair floating in the water near the log, and as they moved closer, they saw her. A girl was face down in the shallow stream, her arms stiff behind her back at an unnatural angle. They stopped and noticed that even though the water was shallow, they figured they knew how she died. And when I say shallow, it was about 8 inches. The log had been placed on top of her, forcing her face into the stream. Jim figured the log was about 4 feet long, probably weighing 100 pounds, and thought the girl's death couldn't have been accidental. The men ran back to their car and headed to Camp Colby's headquarters, and eventually the police were called. L.A. County Deputy Sheriff Catherine Scott got the call, and she and her lieutenant of the homicide division responded to the call. Out at the crime scene, the coroner did his cursory exam. Detective Scott noticed there were scratches and bruises around the girl's face and eyes. Her eyes were still intact due to being submerged in the water. And as the coroner finished extracting her from the lake, Detective Scott noticed the hair around the boulders nearby.
There was hair on the rocks?
Yeah, her hair had been cut.
Oh.
Detective Scott gathered some of it into evidence, but also took a few strands of the hair and pressed them into a piece of paper and placed it in her uniform pants pocket. She vowed she was going to solve this case no matter what it took. The coroner made notes that the abrasions on the girl's face were probably caused by her face being smashed into the water and hitting the pebbles at the bottom of the shallow stream. He noted that she had defensive bruises on her arms from either being grabbed forcefully or from trying to shield herself from being hit. He saw she had jewelry on, an ankle bracelet and earrings, one earring in her ear and the other tangled in her hair. When the full autopsy was done at the medical examiner's office, Dr. Eva Hauser did the autopsy. Dr. Hauser found the girl had bruises all over her upper body, chin, chest, arms, hands, and face that were all inflicted before her death. Dr. Hauser also checked to see if Missy had been raped, and she hadn't.
Was she fully dressed?
She was fully dressed. Her cause of death would eventually be determined to be homicide drowning.
Tell me more about her hair being cut off. I find that fascinating.
Oh, her hair, they had it all over. So the boulder where the log was on like dry land, so it wasn't in the water. So there was hair just all over around the boulder, and it was just bizarre.
Because you described her as having long hair.
Yes. I don't know how short they cut it, because I don't know if her mom noticed it, like when they did funeral arrangements. I don't know if her mom even got to really see her after she had been pulled from the water, but she didn't know about the hair until a lot later. So I'm thinking maybe they just cut some from the back.
The fact that her hair is cut is just so strange.
I know. It's just a weird thing to do.
Were there any signs that she was restrained?
No, there was not any ligature marks on her wrists or feet. But she's so little to Leah.
Oh, that's just really interesting because you would think to have her hair cut, there would be some sort of evidence of being bound.
Right, but there wasn't. She hadn't been. Before I go further on, I have to tell you about another close friend of Missy's. Her name was Karen Severson, and she and Missy had been friends since they were in junior high. And junior high is different than middle school.
Yeah, I went to junior high.
Yeah, I went to middle school. So middle school is grade 6 through 8th, where junior high is grades 7 through 9th. So they made friends somewhere around the 7th grade. They were actually more like sisters than friends and confided everything in one another. Karen became Missy's protector of sorts when Missy started attracting boys a lot around the age of 13. Karen had told Missy's mom, Irene, that she had to look out for Missy. She didn't need those boys chasing her so much. Like Laura, the boys were not exactly breaking down the door to date Karen. Karen had gained a lot of weight during junior high and high school, and it didn't seem to bother her. But, you know, kids are shallow.
Yeah, and mean and cruel.
And mean and cruel. Didn't seem to bother her, at least on the surface. Karen sometimes talked behind Missy's back, though. One day she went over to a group of girls that sometimes hung out with Missy and said something to them about a rumor that was out about how they had all had sex with the same guy at a party that was held the week prior.
Who's they?
The girls. This group of girls that Karen went up to.
She told the group that they all had sex with the same guy?
Yeah, she's like, there's this rumor. There was a party last week and you all had sex with the same guy. One of the girls got in Karen's face and demanded to know who said it to her. They really wanted to know who were spreading these rumors. And when Karen confessed that Missy had told her, the girls stopped talking to Missy. The party and this rumor had never happened, just to let you know. And Missy was confused why the girls never talked to her again. They didn't tell her what Karen said.
And she hadn't spread that rumor?
No, and she hadn't spread that rumor.
Well, that's not very nice of Karen.
No, and you know, the strange thing about it was when Missy told her, like, why are these girls not talking to me anymore? Karen said, I don't know, but she told Missy, don't worry about it because you always have me and I'm your best friend.
Oh, okay.
She's like that.
She's a little jealous. Wants all Missy's attention.
Right. While they were in junior high, Karen dated a guy named Michael, and she dropped everything to spend all of her time with him.
She's one of those girls.
Yeah, and Missy worried about how much time they were spending together, and she was right to worry. Karen got pregnant. She was only in the 9th grade.
Oh, man.
And that's like 14, and that's still junior high.
Yeah. Oh, that's, ooh.
Yeah. Karen kept the baby, and she eventually dropped out of 9th grade when she was in her 5th month. And Missy was so upset. Around this time, Missy began spending more and more time with Laura, because she was really tight with Karen.
And now Karen's not at school.
And now Karen's not at school, so she's getting closer to Laura.
And Christy's moved away.
Exactly. But Missy did visit Karen every day after school. Karen eventually gave birth to a daughter that she named Andrea on January 31st, 1983. And Missy hoped she'd be returning to school after Andrea's birth. Missy also hung around a boy named Randy Fernandez a lot. Randy had a huge crush on her. He wanted to be her boyfriend just so bad. She just didn't feel that way about him.
Plus, she had a boyfriend.
Right. One day after Andrea was born, Karen visited Missy's house while Randy was there. As the three were in the living room, Karen had an outburst and demanded that Missy leave with her and go help her take care of Andrea. Like, come home with me, just drop what you're doing, leave Randy. When Missy didn't say anything, Karen left in a huff, telling Missy that she hated her sometimes for having the perfect life. Missy cried after Karen left, and Randy, being very uncomfortable, decided to make his exit. Missy struggled through the rest of 9th grade without Karen by her side. Karen decided to return to school in the 10th grade. However, she wasn't going to go back to Polytechnical High School where they originally went. Karen decided to go to Mission High School, Poly's continuing education program.
It's like alternative education.
Yeah.
That has different hours for the students to go day, exactly. Night. Yeah, I went to one.
Yeah, and that's what I was going to explain. Like, sometimes they're the kids who have to support themselves or...
That was me.
That was you. Or sometimes they have problems where they can't attend school. It's kind of more tailored to your schedule, I guess.
Yeah, they had night classes. And
And I know a lot of girls go there when they get pregnant,
too. Yeah, when I was there, there were tons of girls that were pregnant there. I was not one of them, but there were lots. And I am living proof you can graduate from an alternative education school and still become a lawyer.
Yes. Go to a good college.
Yep.
And become a lawyer.
And a true crime podcaster. Living proof.
Living proof. Missy tried to convince Karen to go back to Polly, saying that's where all their friends were, but Karen was adamant. And around this time is when Missy's parents had started their divorce process. So around 10th grade. 2 weeks after Irene told Missy about the upcoming divorce, Missy had something to tell her. She had decided she was going to attend Mission High with Karen when she enrolled in January and wasn't going to return to Polly to finish the school year. Ever the loyal friend, Missy decided she wanted to go to Mission to be with Karen, and when she enrolled, they were inseparable again. All of Missy's free time was spent with Karen and Andrea.
Well, what about Laura?
Well, she left Laura.
Oh, okay.
During Missy's junior year at Mission, she started noticing the boys noticing her, and she also discovered alcohol. One of the boys that noticed Missy was Vic Amaya, and if you remember, Laura had dated Vic.
After Missy.
After Missy. He was 2 years older than Missy, with dark brown hair and eyes, and Christy Crawford remembered the first time Missy had brought him to Stonehurst Park. All the girls wanted his attention, but he only had eyes for Missy. Their relationship grew both emotionally and sexually, but Missy never called him her boyfriend. It was kind of like they were best friends, really close friends, with benefits. And although they continued to sleep together, even though they weren't boyfriend and girlfriend, it's like they just had this really special relationship.
They're fuck buddies.
Yes.
It's a very special relationship.
Eventually, Karen found a boyfriend in Missy's old friend, Randy. Randy hadn't gotten over his crush on Missy, even though he was with Karen now. After 2 weeks into Karen and Randy's relationship, Missy came home one day very upset. She told Irene, her mom, that Karen didn't trust her around Randy.
It's more like I wouldn't trust Randy around her.
Exactly. Missy overcompensated during the time she spent with Karen, trying to reassure her, but Karen continued to push her away and warned her to stay away from Randy.
Is this Karen or Laura?
This is Karen.
Okay.
This drove Missy to spend more time with Laura, especially in the spring of 1985, when they would hang out a lot at Stonehurst Park, playing frisbee, drinking beer, smoking pot. So we're in 1985 now, just to give everyone the time shift. One day, Laura and Missy had been hanging out at the park with some friends when Vic showed up. Missy noticed that he and Laura were holding hands, and she asked Laura later that night, when they were alone, if she was seeing Vic. Laura said yes and asked Missy if she had been going out with Vic previously. Missy assured her that they were just friends. We are just friends. He's all yours.
But they were fuck buddies.
Yeah, but no one needed to know that. Yeah, okay. And I think probably Missy stopped when he was with Laura.
And she never really considered Vic her boyfriend.
Right. Just her special friend.
So to be clear, we have Laura with Vic.
And Karen with Randy.
And Missy with?
Bobby.
Sounds like a John Cougar Mellencamp song.
We just need some Jack and Diane, right?
Little ditty.
That summer, Laura and Vic were outwardly dating. And like you pointed out, Missy had begun dating Bobby. Vic would call Missy sometimes, though, late at night to complain about Laura, saying she was too possessive. Also that summer, Karen had rented her own apartment and Randy was living with her and little Andrea. Karen and Missy ended up making up, and Karen told Missy that she trusted her 100% around Randy because she knew Randy was totally faithful to her. One day in August, Karen invited Missy over to her and Randy's apartment. At first, the three spent time in the living room watching 2-year-old Andrea play. During the visit, Karen's bedroom phone rang, and Karen left Missy and Randy alone in the living room.
Oh, no.
I know. Missy bent over to play with Andrea, and Randy took that as his opportunity to pull Missy into his lap, and he was laughing. He whispered to Missy that he'd always loved her and that Karen didn't mean anything to him.
What an asshole.
I know. Missy struggled to get out of his grip, but before she could, Karen came into the room and just couldn't believe her eyes. Her best friend was throwing herself at her man. She was so angry. She called Missy a slut, and as Missy scrambled to get back on her feet and explain to Karen what happened, Karen grabbed Missy's arm and threw her out of the apartment. Karen then turned her fury on Randy, smacking him across the face. She told him she was going to the store with Andrea, and he better pack his things and be gone by the time she came back.
Well, at least she had the common sense to do that.
Exactly. About a week later, Karen called Missy at home and told her she really wanted to make up with her, and she didn't want a boy to come between them. Missy was elated. She and Karen made plans to go to Wikiup later that day and party. The girls hiked around Wikiup, and Karen had found a large log and carved Karen and Missy, Friends Forever, right above where Randy had carved Randy and Karen 1985. Karen took Missy over to the log and said she meant those words. They were friends forever. Missy was so happy to have Karen back in her life.
There's a lot of drama going on. A lot of teen drama.
A lot of teen drama. I mean, she's mad at Missy. Laura's mad at Missy. Everybody's mad. Then they make up and then pass some boyfriends around. I mean, it's totally high school.
I don't miss those days.
Me either. That September, after school started, Laura and Vic broke up. About a week after the breakup, Missy went over to Vic's house to see how he was doing. She knew he'd been unhappy for a while in his relationship with Laura, and she wanted to talk to him. Missy and Vic stood outside of Vic's house for over an hour talking, and he explained he broke up with Laura because she just didn't trust him. Vic had found out that Laura had a friend call him and flirt with him as a test of his faithfulness.
I had friends do that with their boyfriends, too.
I know. So stupid, right? And Vic had just been infuriated by the call. Vic told Missy that Laura never trusted him, and she had accused him of cheating on her with Missy, which really upset Missy. Didn't Laura understand she'd never do that to her, never be a disloyal friend?
There's a lot of teenage insecurity going around.
Oh, for sure.
With this drama.
She asked Vic, "Why does this keep happening to me? Why do my friends accuse me of wanting to steal their boyfriends?"
Because you're pretty.
Right. And they're insecure. Missy was crying and Vic hugged her. He held her, and when she stopped crying, he looked at her and kissed her cheek, hugging her again. Right after this happened, a car that was parked along the street honked its horn and turned on the headlights.
Oh, no.
It was Laura.
Oh, fuck.
Vic wondered, how long has she been there?
Missy's just at the wrong place at the wrong time.
Oh, my God, right?
A lot.
Missy encouraged him to go over to Laura and assure her that there was nothing between them. Laura rolled down her window as Vic sauntered up to the car. She said, "What's that bitch doing here?"
Oh, man. Now Missy's a bitch? Oh.
Vic got angry. "What's it to you? We aren't even together anymore, and I can be friends with whoever I want." Laura let that soak in, and she told Vic, quote, "I'm going to kill her for sure," end quote. Then peeled away.
Oh, man. He could have tried to calm that situation down a little better.
A little bit, right?
I mean.
Missy just told him, and she's so upset. Vic went back over to where Missy was and assured her that Laura wasn't mad at her.
What? How did he interpret that?
Well, he didn't want to upset her again.
She just threatened Missy's life.
I know, and he didn't tell Missy that. He just said, "No, she's just mad at me. Don't worry." He just didn't want her to cry anymore.
Well, there were better ways he could have solved that problem, like confirm to Laura that it wasn't what she thought.
Right.
Instead of being like, "I can be with whoever I fucking want to be with."
I know.
That's not quelling the fire.
No. The following week, Missy found out that Karen was pregnant again.
What?
Yeah, this time with Randy's baby.
What? I thought she broke up with Randy.
Yeah, and they got back together because she was pregnant. Karen and Missy's friendship grew distant by the end of September as Karen focused on her relationship with Randy and their upcoming new baby. Both Lauren and Karen seemed to have made up with Missy, according to her mom, Irene, and there were no hard feelings between them as October began.
I mean, I can see that. They seem to ebb and flow with their relationship.
Right. Fast forward to about a week after Missy's funeral, Karen and Andrea moved in with the Avila family. It made sense because Karen was spending all of her time with them anyway. So she just asked Irene one day, can I just move in? And Irene was like, sure. Karen totally took charge and was spearheading an effort to help the police solve Missy's murder. One night, Karen was convincing the group she had assembled that included Laura, Missy's brother, Mark, and some other friends, Vic was part of the group, to go back to where Missy's body was found to see if there was anything left behind that the police didn't find. They drove up to the canyon in the dark, no one really questioning how they would be able to find anything without daylight.
I don't think I'd go back there.
I know, it's creepy in the dark.
No. Where my BFF was murdered.
I know. No. And once they got there, they did leave shortly after, and they all decided they were going to come back in the morning. Going back in the morning at the stream, Mark noticed the log that had been carved. Remember, Missy and Karen friends forever, and Karen and Randy.
Was that the log that was on top of Missy?
Yes.
It was the same log?
It was the same log. When Mark looked at it, he noticed that Missy and Randy's names had fresh slash marks through it. Mark confronted Karen, who had said before that she'd never been to that area. Karen denied again being there, and after thinking for a second, she had an outburst. Randy must have come up there to make the carving, like to slash out those names, because he's pissed that Missy doesn't want him, and him and Karen broke up. And
well, who wrote Missy and Karen forever?
Karen did.
But she said she was never there.
Exactly. So she's a liar.
So is she trying to say that Randy did all the carvings, even Missy and Karen?
Yes.
Weird.
I know. It sounds very weird. Karen was convinced that Randy had killed Missy and told the others her theory. So they're at the stream and she said, oh, Randy crossed out these names. Oh, he has to be the one that killed Missy. She said Randy hated Missy because she was so pretty and never liked him the way he liked her. So he must have lured her to the stream and killed her, because if he couldn't have her, no one could. As Karen went on, she ended up convincing the others in the group that, yeah, Randy must have done it. Karen was so angry, she told the group that Randy had to die for what he did to Missy. He took her best friend from her.
Did the police notice the carvings?
That is a good question. They must have, but it wasn't mentioned that they noticed it in the book. They had to have, though. Before I tell you more about what happened at the stream, we're going to take a break. So I told you that Karen was super angry as they're standing at the stream. And as she's saying that Randy has to die for this, the group decided, okay, yep, we're going to make Randy pay. The next day at Missy's house, Karen called Randy at work. She told him she was sorry for the way things had ended between them. And, you know, it's just because Missy's gone and I'm so sad and depressed. And as she talked, Randy thought about the conversation they had a week prior when Karen had called him in hysterics, accusing him and screaming at him that he had killed Missy. But as he listened to her now, he swore there was someone also listening on the extension in the house. But he didn't say anything. And during the call, Karen invited him to Christy Crawford's house for a get-together of all of Missy's friends.
So Karen had accused him pretty much right after Missy died of being the killer.
Of being the killer. But during this phone conversation, Karen told him, don't worry, no one really thinks you killed Missy, and that you must go to the party with me. Karen was telling him these things to lure him to Christy's house, because Vic and some of the other guys in the group were going to kick the shit out of him, hoping to kill him.
And Karen is pregnant with his baby, right?
Right.
Going to a party.
Going to a party. Randy agreed to come to the party, despite his hesitation, and he really should have listened to his intuition, because that night of the party, he was beaten within an inch of his life.
Really?
Yes. Vic and Bobby were part of the group that beat him up. Vic had on steel-toed boots and kicked him in the ribs several times, breaking his ribs. while Karen shouted from the sidelines, "Do it! Do it for Missy!"
Damn!
I know! It was crazy! Besides breaking Randy's ribs, he also suffered a concussion. And as they were beating him up, he eventually passed out from the beating.
Is this at a real party?
No. They just lured him there. Before he passed out, he heard Karen yelling jubilantly that, "We did it! We killed him! He's dead!" The group really thought they killed him and were so surprised to find out when he survived. But barely.
So then, don't they realize that would make them no better than Missy's killer?
Right.
They're now equal.
Right. I know.
In bad deeds.
They just thought, oh, they had to avenge her death. You know, they all loved her so much. They had to avenge her death.
How did he survive?
Just by the grace of God, because when he passed out, they thought he died. Because they're kids and they don't check these things. And so they left him.
At Christie's house?
At Christie's house. And when he eventually woke up, he drove himself to the hospital. So the group realizes Randy survived. And Karen convinced them to try and kill Randy again right before Thanksgiving.
Did Randy not go to the police?
Randy did not go to the police.
And Karen wants to kill him again? She wants to try again?
Yeah, she wants to try again. She called a group meeting at Missy's house. After everyone arrived, she got right to the point. You know, we really have to avenge Missy's death, and we were unsuccessful, and now we just have to do it.
Do none of these delinquents realize that they're going to spend the rest of their life in jail?
I know. No, they weren't thinking about prison. That. I know. That's what I thought. But as Karen's talking, she seemed to be really persuasive, and they just started nodding their heads. Yeah, yeah, we got to do it. Karen asked Vic if he had gotten the guns, and he said he had, so now they were going to try and kill Randy by shooting him. Vic, along with another friend of Missy's named Brian, so Bobby wasn't part of this group anymore, they were going to go find Randy, and they were going to shoot him, so there'd be no mistaking he was dead. Vic had been in turmoil since Missy's death, dreaming about her every night, and he was looking for someone to turn his pain on, and Randy was the perfect victim. Vic and Brian assured Karen they weren't backing down, and Karen spoke the next step in her plan. They were going to go to her house the next day and get some pool acid, and when Vic and Brian killed Randy, they would take his body and pour the acid on it until he was unrecognizable.
What the fuck?
I know! Then she said that they were going to cut off his pinky finger to prove to her it was done.
She is hardcore.
I know. It's like the mafia.
Where is Laura in all of this?
Laura is not part of this group. She pretty much just kind of dropped out of talking to the group after Missy's death. Missy's brother Mark and his fiance Siobhan were at the meeting and they gasped at the plan. Like, oh my God, you're going to pour acid and pinky finger and what the hell?
Yeah, that's a little much.
It is. But Karen asked, what was wrong? Randy killed Missy, and I want proof he's dead.
Then go do it yourself.
I know. Mark understood the hatred Karen had for Randy for killing her best friend. So he was like, okay. Like, nobody stopped anyone. Nobody was the voice of reason. They were just so upset that Missy was gone that everyone was cool with this plan. When the day came where they were going to carry out their plan, Karen told Irene about it. Now, Irene is a grown woman, and she was upset about this plan.
Well, yeah, she's the mom in this group.
She's like, Karen, you have to stop them and just let the police handle solving the murder. Revenge wasn't going to bring Missy back, and she didn't want Karen and the others to get in trouble. Karen wasn't convinced, though, and reiterated to Irene that that night, everything was going to be taken care of.
Now, she's living with Irene, right?
Yes.
How much time has passed by since Missy was killed?
This is probably like a month or two.
Okay.
Irene felt powerless to stop Karen. Karen was on a mission.
She could call the police.
She really could, but she didn't. And she knew Karen had been on this mission ever since she'd moved into their home. So Karen really wants to find Missy's killer. I really can't do anything to stop her. But you said she could have called the police.
Yeah, she's an adult. She could have stopped this.
But she didn't. Partly because...
Spoiler alert.
Yeah. Partly because Karen had convinced Irene that Randy did it. So everyone was kind of on board. Like, okay, well, I guess if it happens, I guess it's okay.
Justice. I don't know. Your mind. Vigilante justice.
Right. Vigilante justice. A short time after Karen told Irene about the plan. Vic and Brian were setting up the spot they were going to hide in a few yards from Randy's apartment door. He would be arriving home in about 10 minutes, and the boys waited. After the 10 minutes passed, with no sign of Randy, Vic thought about how he was minutes away from actually murdering someone. This is finally when he thought about it. He got a knot in his stomach, and he continued to reason that Missy was the only person he was willing to kill for, and he must avenge her death. After 20 minutes passed, Vic was thinking that maybe they missed Randy somehow. He and Brian decided to wait another 10 minutes, and if Randy hadn't shown up by them, they would come back the next day. Randy didn't show up as planned, and Vic called it off. He and Brian would have to come back.
Oh, Randy dodged a bullet. Literally.
Yeah, literally. When Vic and Brian returned to the Avila home, Karen ran out to the driveway to meet them. Did you do it? Is he dead?
Where's the pinky?
Yeah, where's the pinky? Vic and Brian shook their heads and told her how Randy had never shown up. She went ballistic.
Karen needs to calm down.
Yeah, she's crazy. They went inside and Irene sighed in relief when she realized Randy was still alive. The next day, Vic and Brian went back out and hid outside of Randy's apartment. This time, Randy was on time, and as Vic cocked his gun, Brian stopped him. Brian said, "Wait, something's wrong. As soon as I saw Randy, I got this weird feeling that he couldn't have killed Missy." Vic dropped his gun and admitted that he too had the same feeling.
Why couldn't he have killed Missy?
I don't know why they thought that, and I didn't mention it before, but Randy was a small guy. He was probably about 5'3", so he was tiny, but for some reason, Brian just felt this, and Vic was like, "Yeah, you know, I feel it too."
And she was last seen with three guys in a Camaro.
Right, right.
This group seems to forget that part.
They forget a lot of things. Vic and Brian went back to the Avila house, and most of the group had been relieved when they came back and said they hadn't killed Randy. Everyone except Karen. She, of course, was livid.
She's pissed.
She's pissed. 2 days later, everyone gathered at the Avila home for Thanksgiving and talked about their frustration that the police had not made any arrests. Detective Scott had called earlier that week and said they had run down the blue Camaro lead. And while they weren't finished investigating that lead, it was really going nowhere.
Yeah, do you know how many people drove a blue Camaro in 1985?
Right.
Every guy I dated.
They literally got records on every blue Camaro in the area. They did talk to the owners and everything. They ended up not finding these three boys in the blue Camaro.
I had a blue Camaro.
Did you?
1991.
Nice.
It's a piece of shit. Point being, though, I mean, that's a very popular car in the 80s. And absolutely. Three boys is just a very generic description.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Karen had made a complete 180 in her thoughts and told Irene that she wasn't sure that Randy killed Missy after all. And from that day forward, she stopped talking about Randy and stopped talking about how much she hated him. She had hated him so much, though, the week prior that she had aborted the baby that she and Randy had conceived. After returning from the abortion clinic, she had happily announced to everyone that the fetus, who had been aborted at nearly 5 months of gestation, was a boy, and she was so happy that she had killed Randy's baby boy because he had killed her best friend.
I don't like this Karen.
I know. She's kind of nutty, right?
Who brags about that?
I know.
That's horrible. It's so trashy. And
it is.
Oh, I'm livid.
And the group didn't know what to say. But this news they found disgusting. It was one thing to be upset about Missy, but to be this elated over abortion was a bit appalling to them and disgusting.
And to casually just be like, "Oh, it was a boy."
Yeah, it was a boy. I'm so glad I killed it.
What?
Especially now when she changed her mind over Randy's guilt in Missy's murder. So really, she's like, "Oh yeah, he didn't do it now, but okay." That Thanksgiving, Karen had hugged Irene and told her that she was so thankful that Irene had allowed her to live with the Avila family and for loving her like a daughter. Irene hugged her back and said that Missy was so lucky to have her as a friend, and she was lucky to have Karen as her friend. That night, Karen also told everyone that they couldn't give up on looking for Missy's murderer and decided now that Laura Doyle must know more than what she told the police. Because she's the one that told them about the three boys in the Camaro.
Yeah, and she's the one that allegedly went to the park with her. I was the last one to see her alive.
Right, yes. The others agreed. They would have to go to the police. The police, too, thought Laura wasn't telling the whole truth. And so they brought her in for questioning again. They brought her in a few times, and Laura changed her story, which the police decided was also bullshit. But they didn't have any proof of anything and had to let her go. Like, she told them a story about how they were in a church parking lot and not at the park. And Missy found someone that she knew. Like, she changed locations. The police ran out of viable leads, and Missy's case grew cold for 3 years. After 3 years, however, the police got a call from a girl named Ava Chirombolo. She had been at the stream the day Missy was killed, and now, 3 years later, she decided not to live in fear anymore and told the police what she knew.
Who's this Ava chick?
She was a friend of Missy, Laura, and Karen's. So I'm going to tell you what really happened, according to Ava. On October 1st, Ava and her boyfriend, Steven, had been living with Karen for a couple days. Karen and Steven had been friends for many years, and he and Ava moving in with Karen had seemed like an ideal situation. They needed a place to live, and Karen needed roommates to help with the rent and other bills. On the morning of the 1st, after Steven had gone to work, Karen asked Ava if she'd like to go with her to her grandmother's house for dinner, and Ava decided to go. She hadn't had a chance to really get to know Karen, and she agreed to go so that they could spend more time together. Ava and Karen got into her car around 2 p.m., and they ended up driving to Stonehurst Park. They got to the parking lot, and Laura was also in the parking lot with Missy in her car. Karen motioned over to Laura's car and said, "Yep, there's Missy and Laura." Karen drove her car over to the driver's side of Laura's car and started cussing Laura out. Laura gave it right back, and the two girls were just in this vicious argument. Suddenly, Laura took off, and Karen followed her, and they ended up heading to Tahunga Canyon to wiki up while they were chasing Laura.
In the car. What is this?
Karen turned to Ava and told her that she and Laura were just pretending to fight, and what they really wanted to do was scare Missy. After driving about 40 minutes, Laura and Karen got to their destination near the stream. Laura and Karen got out of the car and were kind of talking to one another away, and Missy moved to Laura's driver's side to see if she could hear what they were saying to each other, because now they're not yelling at each other. They're discussing something.
So are they in a wooded area?
They are in an area where they could park, where there is a wooded area, and then you have to go down where the stream's at. Okay.
So they've spent 40 minutes chasing each other around, eventually stopping probably on some sort of dirt road in a wooded area not far from the stream, right?
Right. So Missy's trying to listen, and they stopped talking to one another, and they turned to look at Missy and said they weren't really mad at each other, and that it was Missy they hated because she had slept with her boyfriends. Missy started crying. She's just saying, "I didn't do that." But they continued yelling at her while she cried, naming boys' names and accusing her of sleeping with them all.
She had to have been so confused.
Oh, I'm sure she was confused as shit. Then Karen said that they were going to take a walk. Missy looked at Ava. So Ava is standing there, and she's just, "What the fuck is going on, too?" And Missy kind of looked at her, kind of pleading in her eyes, just, you know, "Help me," kind of thing.
Did they make her get out of the car?
They did. Laura grabbed Missy by the wrist and pulled her out of the car, and the four girls headed down a path that would lead them to the stream. Once they got to the stream, Missy sat on that boulder I told you about, and Laura and Karen just continued to yell at her, accusing her of sleeping with Vic, Randy, and other boys. Missy sat on the boulder crying, and Ava just stood at the path clearing, watching it all. I mean, she's just like, "What the hell?"
She doesn't even know two of the girls.
No, not really. I mean, she did know them, but not really.
She wasn't even friends with any of them,
no,
really.
No, not really. Laura pulled Missy's hair from behind and yanked, screaming in Missy's face, accusing her of fucking Vic. Even though Ava didn't see specifically, this was when one of them, either Laura or Karen, caught Missy's hair.
They had a knife?
Mm-hmm. After cutting her hair, Laura walked into the middle of the stream. She told Missy to come out there.
Hell no.
And Laura was taunting her, like, it's not very deep, Missy, because Missy was afraid of water. She's like, it's not deep out here. Come out here.
I'd be afraid of Laura.
Exactly.
Why the hell do you want me to come out there?
Missy didn't move. She just continued crying. Karen pushed her off the boulder and shoved her toward the stream. Missy took a few steps into the stream and Karen walked forward and grabbed her by the wrist. Ava, at this point, got scared and turned to run back to the car. When she got back to the car, she heard Missy scream. After some time, Karen came back to where Ava was with the cars and told her she had to hide the body, and she got in her car and she drove off, leaving Ava next to Laura's car. After a few minutes, Laura came back to the car and she was in a panic. Laura's pants and shoes were wet, and she told Ava she was afraid she was going to get caught. Then the girls got into the car and started driving. As you can imagine, Ava is confused. Where's Missy? What the hell's going on? And so she asked Laura what happened, and Laura admitted to her that she killed Missy. Laura said it a few times and described that at first she said it like with an evil laugh, like, ha ha ha, I killed Missy. Then Laura started acting scared, like, oh my God, I killed Missy. No one is sure which girl pushed Missy's head into the water, smashing it against the pebbles in the stream. However, due to the size and weight of the log, both girls had to have carried it and placed it on Missy's body to weigh her down.
That's what I was just thinking, because you said it was 4 feet long and like 100 pounds.
Yeah, there was no way one person could have done it. And in case you're wondering why it took Ava 3 years to come forward to the police, she was terrified that Laura and Karen would kill her too.
Well, I mean, did you see Karen with Randy?
Right, and Karen's nuts, as we all know.
Yeah, hell yeah.
I don't blame
her
for being scared.
I would be so afraid of Karen too.
She literally lived in fear for those 3 years. She had nightmares. She couldn't sleep. She was afraid to shower alone.
PTSD?
Yeah, it was truly a horrific experience. Like, I can't believe she lived like that, but she just didn't know what to do. And the reason she came forward after those 3 years was her younger brother had killed himself, and they were super close. And she had realized that the pain she was experiencing must have been the same pain that Missy's family went through.
Oh, so she could empathize
right
with what they had experienced.
Right, and she's like, they have to know what happened. I can't live with this anymore. And she's like, I just don't care what happens to me. I have to tell. And that's why she came forward.
Where was Karen when she came forward?
Karen was still living with the Avilas.
You are fucking kidding me.
No, 3 years later.
I did not expect that answer.
No, she was. She was.
She just like took Missy's place.
She did. She really did.
I'm so livid.
Detective Scott interviewed Ava, and she knew that Ava was the real deal. Because during their investigation, the police never leaked the fact that Missy's hair had been cut. And like I told you earlier, her mother didn't even know. So when Ava revealed that detail, Detective Scott was elated. She's like, yep, we got him. After a very long interview with Ava, Detective Scott, who had never taken that lock of Missy's hair from her pocket, took the little package outside and let the strands blow in the wind. Because she's like, finally, this is solved.
Really? She really did that?
Mm-hmm. She really did that.
Isn't that some sort of evidence or something?
Well, she took some for evidence.
Okay.
That was her private stash.
Okay. Like something from a movie or poetic.
July 27th, 1988 was the day that Detective Scott and her partner, Detective Dan Jenkins, had been waiting these 3 years for. They were going to bring in Karen and Laura and interview them in light of the new information they had.
What's Laura been doing with herself?
She really hasn't been doing much, but I did read in the book that she kind of became a drug addict and kind of just, she lived at home with her alcoholic parents. She just had a dysfunctional life at this point, not really talking to any of the friend group, but they do know that she was doing drugs.
And I wonder what she was thinking when Karen was trying to kill Randy.
I know.
And solve the murder. I would have been like, girl, shut the fuck up.
Yeah, shut up, man. It's crazy. And there is so much I didn't tell you about. This book I read was just hundreds of pages. Like, Karen accused Christy Crawford at one point of killing Missy. She accused some other guy that Missy had known from school. She just led Irene to believe, like, these leads. And I believe she did it to kind of throw off the police.
Right.
If they're looking at these other people, they're not looking at me. The detectives first called Karen and said they needed to ask her a few questions and wondered if she was available. Karen told them, of course, I'm available. After all, she'd been giving police all these false leads over the investigation. They told her to be at the station at 11 a.m. They next called Laura and told her to be there too at 11. Karen arrived first with her newest boyfriend and 5-year-old Andrea. Detective Scott told them to take a seat because she wanted Karen and Laura to see each other in the waiting area before being taken into individual interview rooms.
Nice.
Yes. Detective Scott played this well. After Laura arrived and Karen saw her, she gasped and said to Laura, what are you doing here?
What are you doing here?
What are you doing here? So Detective Scott's like, yeah. And Detective Scott took them to their own interview rooms. So she leaves the girls in separate rooms, and after she left them, she and Detective Jenkins promptly went to lunch, letting the girls sit and wonder.
I would have a panic attack.
Oh my God.
I swear to God.
A little after noon, so it's probably been almost an hour, the detectives decided to visit Karen first. They told her they knew she killed Missy, and Karen was like, I don't know what you're talking about, of course. The liar till the end. Tricking her, they told her that they had just spent the last hour with Laura, who confessed to everything. Laura said that Karen had done everything and it was her idea to kill Missy. Karen sat there and said nothing, and they all just sat in silence for a while. And the detective was like, we can sit here all day. We're not going anywhere. Eventually, Karen cracked. She insisted it was Laura's idea. She planned everything. She was the one that drove Missy there, and she was the one who started calling her names. She said Laura was the one that cut Missy's hair, and she held Missy's head under the water. Then she said Laura was the one who placed the log on Missy's back.
So Karen did nothing, really.
Yes, she said, I was paralyzed by fear.
Oh, stop it.
While this was happening, and I just stood there watching, and I didn't participate at all. Then Detective Scott said, well, how many girls were there? And she said, 3. And Detective Scott's like, look, we know you're full of shit. How many girls were there? And she admitted there were 4 girls at the stream that day. And thereby, she confirmed that Ava was there, again confirming that Ava's story was probably true. After the interview, Karen was arrested for first-degree murder. And it was funny because the detectives describe it like she really thought she was going home after the interview, but nope. Next, the detectives went to talk to Laura. It had been 2 hours since she first arrived. And when the detectives got into the room, they immediately told her what Karen had confessed to. Laura was to blame for everything. She planned it and did it all. Laura just sat there and sat there for the next 50 minutes, 50, not saying a word.
Smart girl. That's how it should be. Exactly. She should have just left.
She should have. Detective Scott got up at this point and said, okay, since you don't want to give us your side of the story, we're going to just believe what Karen said and go with her version of Missy's murder. Laura finally spoke up and said Karen made her do it all, that they needed to teach Missy a lesson.
How is Missy supposed to learn a lesson if Missy is dead?
I know. Trying to say, like, we didn't mean to kill her. We just went up there to teach her a lesson.
And then it got
out of control.
Okay.
Karen was the one that cut her hair and held her under the water before making Laura help her move the log on top of Missy's body. She also admitted that Ava was there. At the end of the interview, Laura was also arrested for first-degree murder. Detective Scott now had the job of telling Irene.
Oh, poor Irene. Her daughter's killer's been living with her for
3 years.
3 years, celebrating Christmas, Thanksgiving, birthdays. She's been helping raise her children.
I know, it's terrible.
It's getting to me.
Yes, it's an awful story. So as you can imagine, Irene was completely shocked. She really didn't want to believe that Karen and Laura had done this. She insisted to Detective Scott, like, this, they couldn't have done it. You have the wrong person. You have the wrong people. I mean, like you said, Irene had lived with Karen for years, treated her like a daughter, told her how grateful she was that she was in her life. But she did finally accept the fact that she and her family, and especially Missy, had been betrayed and manipulated in the worst way. Ava testified at their trial. Karen and Laura had a joint trial, which I always think is a mistake.
Yeah.
And so did Missy's family members, Vic, Christy Crawford, and many others. They all testified. The jury made their verdict, Both Karen and Laura were convicted of second-degree murder and were sentenced to 15 years to life. And while they wanted that first-degree conviction, I guess the jury couldn't firmly believe that the girls had planned it.
At least not unanimously.
Right. Missy's family did take some comfort that Missy's killers were going away for a while and that they couldn't be influenced by Karen and her lies anymore. Now, this is really going to piss you off, Talia.
I'm pretty sure I can't get any more pissed than I am right now.
Karen was released from prison on parole on December 9th, 2011, after serving 23 and a half years. This bitch appeared on Dr. Phil after her release.
No, Dr. Phil, what the... Dr. Phil, come on, man.
And I can't tell you what she did. TV interviews, print media interviews, like she was all over. She even wrote a book about what she called her prison experience and about murdering Missy.
I thought you couldn't do that. I thought you couldn't make money off of your crime.
Yeah, that is what happened. But she was also in talks to make a movie about her life. And her book was called My Life, I Lived It.
God, I'm so angry.
The Avila family had to sue her in 2015 in order for her not to profit from the crime. And the state of California eventually passed Missy's Law, which made it illegal for convicted criminals to profit from telling their stories.
Oh, that's the Missy from Missy's Law.
Yeah.
Karen just probably liked that notoriety.
Oh, dude, she fucking ate it up. She ate it up. She loved being the center of attention because there's some things also I didn't tell you. She ended up going to beauty school and met a woman in beauty school and made friends with her. And this other person in beauty school had a friend that had killed herself over the last year. And it was like the year after Missy had died. So they bonded over like losing their best friends. But Karen would take this girl to Missy's grave. And this woman really felt that Karen ate up the attention she would get by saying, you know, oh, my best friend was murdered.
It's almost like a Munchausen by proxy sort of thing, but through
weirder.
Death.
Yeah, exactly.
Getting that attention as the grieving friend.
Right. Like she just kind of loved to talk about it.
Just gross.
Yeah. Karen also traveled speaking to high schools about what she did and to encourage them to do better.
Are you fucking kidding me?
I can't stand her.
What high school is having her there?
Having a murderer. Here's a convicted murderer to talk about her story. Like, really?
I mean, I'm not going to lie. If I was in high school, that would be freaking amazing. The assemblies I went to sucked.
Right.
But that's a bad idea. That's horrible.
The last I heard, she was working as a telemarketer.
Oh, jeez.
And she did say, well, I was going to donate most of the money that I made off the book. Mm-hmm. And when she was questioned, like, well, what do you mean most of the money? She was like, well, I need money to live on, too. Uh-huh.
Oh, my God.
Laura was released on parole in December 2012 after serving 22 years. And I really couldn't find any more information about her. Probably because she didn't make herself a media whore.
Right. Maybe she actually, I don't know, felt remorse and realized what she did was stupid and didn't want to be known for it.
Exactly. That's what I thought too, but Karen sure as hell didn't mind being branded the murderer.
What I find most interesting with what you've told me is throughout all of this, there's not one hint in Karen's behavior of remorse.
She said she was remorseful in
Okay. Well, I know. I can say I'm a model, right. But it doesn't make me one.
Doesn't make it true. Yeah, when she was on Dr. Phil, oh, I'm really sorry for what I did. And
no, she's not.
No, she's not. She wouldn't be sitting with Dr. Phil.
And she wouldn't. How could she even look at Irene in the eye all those years in her house, living there, eating dinner with her?
Right. It's disgusting.
She got off on this crime.
She really did.
And probably the secret of it.
Probably. And thinking that she's smarter than the cops and everyone else because, oh, they're chasing their tails with all of the bullshit I'm feeding them.
I hate you, Karen.
Karen's an awful person.
She's probably going to listen to this because she's an egomaniac and then give us a 1-star review. That's my guess. I'm sure she obsesses over the crime, all the podcasts and stuff.
Probably. In 1992, there was a CBS made-for-TV movie starring Patty Duke as Irene and Tiffany Amber Thiessen
as
Missy, but it was based on Missy's case. So that wasn't like they were the actual characters, but it was based on. So
based on a true story.
Based on a true story.
Patty Duke.
Oh, Patty Duke, I know.
Isn't she in all the Hallmark stories?
I think so. Probably Tiffany Amber Thiessen was too.
Yeah.
So I told you there was a lot of just other stuff that I didn't tell you. And there was also some weird shit that happened. I know I've told you some of it, but one of the things I wanted to mention that I couldn't fit into the story like cohesively was that Karen would put makeup on little Andrea. Like they would have like their dress up time and she'd put makeup on little Andrea. And when she was done, she'd tell her, oh, you look just like Auntie Missy.
What?
And her friend from beauty school witnessed that once. So it's not like it didn't happen. I just didn't know where to fit it in the
story. She's just obsessed.
It was all crazy.
Anything else you want to add just to make me hate her more?
No,
if
but
that's possible.
I was going to tell you that the book I read on this episode was called Missy's Murder, Passion, Betrayal, and Murder in Southern California by Karen Kingsbury. She spent a lot of time on her book. She had interviewed Irene and Mark Avila, the prosecutor in the case. Her name was Tamia Hope, and others for the book. So she did say at the beginning of the book that she took a little creative license by kind of, you know, they weren't direct quotes from people. The one that Laura said to Vic, quote, you know, I'm going to kill her someday, that was an actual quote. But when I told you about some conversations and stuff, it was kind of just Karen paraphrasing what had been said. But that is my episode on the murder of Missy Avila.
And how did you hear about this?
I heard about this. One of our lovely Patreon members named Laura A, she suggested it.
Laura?
Laura. Not Laura in the story.
Because that would be really weird.
Yeah, hey. And I'll leave with this. If you want to find out more about us, about Patreon or Apple subscriptions, go to our website, crimesandconsequences.com. We are on Facebook and Instagram at Hardcore True Crime.
Patreon, once again, is patreon.com/TNT Crimes because I'm a T and Tanya's a T and together we are TNT.
TNT.
I think that's good. We've done a lot of talking.
We have, so.
I'm kind of sick of hearing myself.
So until our next episode.
Don't kill each other.
Bye.
Bye.